Talk to you about God making a way. God making a way when it doesn't seem that there is a way. You may have come here today wondering, how am I ever going to get through this battle that I'm facing? Maybe it's a battle against cancer. Or another medical problem. Or maybe you lost your job and you can't figure out a way to provide for your family. You have no health insurance. You're ready to lose your house. And there just doesn't seem to be a way forward. The bills are piling up. No matter how hard you try, you're fighting a battle that you can't win. Perhaps you're fighting the pain of rejection. You've lost a good friend. They turned on you. Or you're dating somebody and they drop you. Or you're going through a divorce. And you can't figure out, how can I get past this? What is the way forward? I know I should forgive, but those thoughts and feelings of hurt and anguish, they don't go away. They wake me up at night. What is the way forward? If you're fighting a battle today that seems like you cannot win, you've come to the right place. Because the truth is, you can't win the battle. But Jesus Christ can. God will make a way. Jesus, who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father but through me, is the one who makes a way. Now, not only does he make a way for us to go to heaven, he makes a way for Christians to go through life, to give us victory over the battles that we face until we are called home. The main idea, God will make a way for his people to win their battles. But this is what's really important. But God's way is often not our way of fighting our battles. And that's a point I want to really highlight today. The Bible tells us in Isaiah 55, 8 and 9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways. And my thoughts than your thoughts. In our passage in Joshua 5, we have a perfect example of how God makes a way when it seems as though there is no way. And we're going to see that God's way is not Joshua's way. Just as God's ways are so often not our ways. In our study of Joshua 5, we've come to the point where Israel has crossed the Jordan River and they're encamped in the promised land. They're in Gilgal. God has saved them from Egypt. He has saved them from the wilderness. He has delivered them now into the promised land that he promised to Abraham hundreds of years before. Now, the first thing we realize here is that just because we're saved doesn't mean we're not going to have battles. Sometimes people get the impression that if I'm a Christian, God's going to take care of everything and I'm not going to have any battles. And when the battles do occur, we get upset. It's like, where's God? Doesn't He care? Doesn't He see what I'm going through? We read this in the Psalms. David cries out to God. We face battles as Christians. We're going to heaven by the grace of God. But the journey to heaven oftentimes is filled with suffering, affliction, and battles. Yes, we're bound for the promised land. But let's not be surprised when the battles come. And that's what we see with Joshua at Jericho. He's in the promised land. He's been delivered. But he has work to do. God's work. God put Joshua and Israel in the promised land. He put them in a place where they have to do battle. Verse 13, when Joshua was by Jericho. Joshua is a successor to Moses. He was God's appointed commander of the nation of Israel. And there he is, standing, looking at Jericho. He's alone. He's on a reconnaissance mission. Yes, he sent in two spies. We know that from the story of Rahab. But he wants to see firsthand what Jericho is like, what its fortifications are like, so that he could put together a strategic plan to take that city. May I have the first slide? That's a drawing of Jericho. Jericho has more than one wall. Jericho is on high ground. Joshua has to take this city. So he does reconnaissance, just like Nehemiah did. Remember Nehemiah? He was to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. So he surveyed the walls at night. And when he had surveyed the walls, he came back and told the people, this is what we have to do. So when Joshua went to inspect Jericho, this is what he saw. Heavily fortified city. We have slide 2. On the right side or on the left side, we have the two walls. And we see how they're constructed here. There's an upper city wall and a lower city wall. There's a retaining wall. Now, his mission is to take this city. He doesn't have any catapults. He doesn't have any battering rams. He doesn't have any bombers. He has a bunch of people who have bows and arrows and spears. How's he going to get past these walls? How's he, after he gets through the walls, get into the city and take it? So he's out there trying to see where the weakness is. What is my strategic plan? Jericho is located on high ground. And that may not mean much, but in warfare, at least back in that day and even up through the Civil War and whatnot, those who had the high ground had a distinct advantage. Remember in the Civil War movie, Gettysburg? You got Joshua Chamberlain and the 20th Maine. Their order was to defend the flank. It was high ground. It was good ground. And a little round top just below it, to the left, is Devil's Den. And the Confederate Army was coming up through there. And the Union Army, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. They're over top firing down. And anybody that tries to ascend that, they're getting picked off. They had good ground. They had high ground. And when you saw in that movie, one wave after another of Confederate soldiers coming up the Little Round Top, and they're being repelled because the Union Army is dug in and they're firing down. This gives you an idea of what Joshua is up against. Not only does he have to scale these high walls, he's going uphill. He's got an uphill fight the whole way. How's he going to win? Jericho had the high ground. They had the walls. High walls. Third slide, please. Gives you an idea of the height of those walls. That's from Jericho. I think that's Walt Sire down there checking out those walls. It looks like him from yesterday. He was wearing that same hat out in Community Day. But we're not talking about a little wall that you can jump over. Those walls were 26 feet tall. They had no scaling ladders. They had nothing. And yet, Joshua, who's been put into this battle, has to take this city. How are they going to do that? How would Joshua prepare his army to go to battle? How should they go about taking the city? What's the plan? Fourth slide. Look at the terrain, how rugged it is. We're not talking about driving a tank up there or a Humvee. We're talking about scaling that wall and then going up there, and where's your protection? Never forget a scene in the movie Glory, Civil War, as a black regiment was to take a stronghold from the Confederates, and how they kept on coming, the Union Army. And just when it looked like they got past the last sand dune and they're ready to take that fort, you see this wave of Confederate soldiers just shooting down at them and just blew them up, just wiped them out. Okay, what's the plan? How are you going to take the city? Where do you hide? So you can imagine what Joshua was thinking. Now, Joshua knew that the Lord was with him. Joshua knew that he had been called by God to do this. Joshua knew his mission. We read in chapter 1, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, and you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you." Well, that's an encouragement. On paper, it looks great. God's going to be with me, and he's going to give me every city. This is going to be a tremendous victory. until Joshua goes by Jericho and sees it up front and close and up front. Yeah, he said he's going to give us this city. How's he going to do that? What's the plan? Now we can understand why God said repeatedly in that first chapter to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. Because you're not going to walk into Jerusalem. You've got to fight. You got 30 some cities that you have to take. Joshua sensed he was in a battle that he couldn't win. It was a lost cause. Have you ever been there? When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked. And behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? Right in front of Joshua, this warrior shows up with his sword already drawn. He's not reading the paper. He's not texting, checking the internet. He's ready for war. And Joshua asks the question that is natural. Whose side are you on? Are you on our side or are you on the enemy's side? Are you for Israel or are you for Jericho? Are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? Are you a conservative or are you a liberal? Are you a Calvinist or are you an Arminian? Are you a capitalist or are you a socialist? Are you pro-life or pro-choice? Whose side are you on? Are you for us or against us? And we see from the rest of this chapter, he asked the wrong question. Because the answer was, from the warrior, neither. No, but I am the commander of the Lord's army. Now I have come. The warrior isn't declaring sides. He was there to command the army of the Lord. He was standing with sword drawn, not reading the newspaper, like I said, but he's there ready to fight. Whose side are you on? Who was this commander? Who was this man with a sword drawn? Scholars have suggested that this person was God. Others say it was Christ. Some say it was the angel of the Lord. Certainly Joshua knew it was God speaking to him. He was in God's presence. And the commander of God's army was before him. The commander or captain was the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. Joshua experienced a Christophany, which is a manifestation of the pre-incarnate Christ. He experienced his own burning bush. For Joshua, there was only one thing to do. He fell face down on the ground in reverence. Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, go back, get all your army together, and we're going to win this battle. Is that what he said? Take off your sandals from your feet. For the place you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. There's something about worship prior to fighting God's battles. And that's another point that's being made here. The pre-incarnate Christ appeared to Moses in a burning bush, and now he appears to Joshua. Now, if this individual had been an angel, he would have prevented Joshua from worshiping him. In Revelation 19, 9 and 10, "And he, an angel, said to me, 'These are the true words of God.' Then I fell down at his feet to worship him." Note the angel fell down at John fell down at the angel's feet to worship him. "But the angel said to me, 'You must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you and your brothers who hold to the testimony of Jesus. Worship God.'" So who is this person that is the commander? Who is it that Joshua is bowing down to? The pre-incarnate Christ. Not an angel, or he wouldn't be worshiping him. You know, Joshua's question, "Whose side are you on?" reveals a typical mindset that poses a threat and hindrance to Christians' effectiveness in the service of the Lord. That mindset, we tend to see the battles that we face as our battles, and the forces we face as forces marshaled against us and against our individual causes, concerns, agendas, niches, even our theological beliefs and doctrinal positions. We against they. Controversies throughout history. Controversies today. Our side and their side. And what can we use to weaponize ourselves against the other side? You see, the question is not, is God on our side? The question is, are we on God's side? The commander didn't take any sides. "I am the commander of the Lord's army. Now I have come. Are you on my side, Joshua? Or are you on your own side? Are you going to fight this battle with me as your commander? Or are you going to fight this battle as you being the commander?" Why didn't the captain say, "I am here for you and for Israel"? In essence, he said, "I'm not here to take sides, yours or anyone else's. I am here to take over. I am here to take charge of this battle and this army." God did not meet Joshua to whisper encouragement in his ear or give him a better strategy for the fight ahead or to assure him that he was the best military leader. God met Joshua so that Joshua would fall on his face before God and accept that he was not the commander. He wasn't in charge. Joshua's burning bush experience was to humble him and to make him realize that he could not win this battle, but that God could and would, because God is in charge. God makes a way when there doesn't seem to be a way. Pastor Ben will be preaching about the Battle of Jericho next week, so you get the details. My point is to focus on the commander and how God makes a way and how God's ways are not our ways. And that baffles us. We have it all figured out until we meet God and says, "You're not going to win. You can't win with that strategy. But with my strategy, you will win." We see a couple of principles here. One is that God is with us. Joshua was alone. He met the commander. He was no longer alone. And the commander was no longer alone because he had a host of myriads and myriads of angelic forces that would do battle for him. God's presence is critical when engaging in spiritual warfare. Second principle is God powerfully provides. What did Joshua have to fight with? But God provided not only the way, but everything that was necessary to fight this battle. You recall the story of Elisha and the young servant in 2 Kings 6. The young servant was fearful and greatly distressed and cried out to Elisha when he saw the army of Ben-Hadad. "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" Elisha prayed for God to open the eyes of the servant, and he saw the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire. The captain of the Lord of hosts will fight for Joshua and Israel. May I have the first slide? That city that seemed to be so impregnable, God was going to take it. Joshua didn't have a plan. He didn't need a plan. He just needed the Lord. And the Lord guided and directed him on what he should do. And what was Joshua supposed, what was his plan that God gave him? March around the city and then shout, sound some trumpets, and you got the wind. Would you sign up to be in that army? I lack faith. Come on, this isn't going to work. How are you going to get inside of that by yelling at the walls? How do you climb through this first wall when things are flying down at you? How do you get past the second wall? And then you got the higher ground in the city. You're going door to door fighting to take the city. How are you going to do that? God knew. And he did. What is humanly impossible is possible with God. You know, we fight all kind of battles in our lives, don't we? I'm sure there are personal battles that are raging on right now. But there are some battles that we have to fight that are common to us all. Fighting sin. It's an uphill battle, isn't it? All the time. Combating secularism in our world. I mean, as bored if I hear, is the Bible relevant to today? Yes and no. The people are very plain in coming to us and saying, no, I don't believe it's relevant. Secularism removes God and replaces it with man. We can fix anything. We will find a solution. We will make a way. How successful are we in defeating Satan? Talk about an uphill battle. Talk about being dug in. How successful are we in conquering death? It's a losing battle in all of these. but not with God. Jesus conquered sin. Jesus combated and defeated the philosophies of the world because he had the truth. He was the truth. Jesus defeated Satan at the cross, foretold way back in Genesis. Oh, Satan, you'll crush his heel, but he's going to crush your head. And Jesus conquered death. You see, that's the good news. God's ways are not our ways. His plans are not always our plans. His ways are much higher because his thoughts are much higher. Who in the world would think that God would send a God-man, one man, to die on the cross for everybody's sins? That doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. If you got billions of sinners, how can one person take care of all that sin? It doesn't make sense. That's not the way. Yes, it is. How do you conquer death? What is the way? Find the fountain of youth. Get a battery of doctors. Best health care. Is that going to prevent death? Jesus destroyed death. That's what the resurrection is all about. Jesus destroyed the power of sin on the cross. Jesus destroyed the power of Satan on the cross. Jesus destroyed death with the resurrection. So as we battle these things, we want to keep our focus on Jesus Christ. We want to worship him, and we want to do what Joshua did. He submitted himself to the commander. He bowed down and worshiped him. He didn't call for another strategic planning meeting. He knelt down, bowed down, and prayed and worshiped God. And when God, and he asked God, what should I do? Take off your sandals, you're on holy ground. And what are the last words in that passage? And he did so. You know, believe it or not, we're not in charge of our lives. We might think we are, but all we have to do is fall into sin once and we realize how powerless we are against that, against temptation. We realize how oftentimes our Christianity is mixed with the secularism of our world. And we think God did his part, but the final part is me. I'm the one who is the captain of my own life. I am the one who calls the shots and makes the plans. I am the one who earns the victory. Joshua submitted. He just bowed down. Okay, God, I have no plan for this city. But since you promised to be with me and you promised to provide, I worship you. I'm going to go by faith on your side and do what you tell me to do because you are the commander. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. We can't win the battles, but God can. It's an uphill battle, but Jesus takes every step with us. The greatest uphill battle that He ever faced was climbing up to Golgotha, climbing to the cross to destroy all the enemies of God, to destroy sin, to destroy the philosophies of the world, to destroy Satan, to make sinners right with God. That's the uphill battle He fought. And He won. All the other battles that we face pale in comparison to that uphill battle He had. So if He won there, which He did, and the resurrection gives proof of that, do you think that He can win your battles for you? Do you? That's rousing, that response. Yeah. Can you shout the victory? I mean, that's... All right, keep walking around those walls and then shout. Oh, I don't think this is going to work. I don't know. Well, do you believe that Jesus will win your battles for you? We're getting there. That's what faith is. That's what faith is. If you'd like to talk more with Pastor Ben or myself about the battles and how you can come to a knowledge of God being the commander of your life, see us after service or during the week, and we'll be more than happy to talk with you and pray with you. But remember, God is the commander. His ways are not our ways. And that He will give His people the victory. Amen.